You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. My name is Andy Neal, and you're listening to the Adventurers Out There podcast. What is up, everyone? It's Andy Neal here, and you're listening to the Adventurers Out There podcast, the podcast that asks people about adventure, adventuring. An adventure looks different for different people. What's an adventure for you may not be an adventure for somebody else, or maybe someone's whole life is an adventure. Who knows? I just like having conversations with people who've done cool stuff, who have accomplished cool things, who have been cool places, who have just an amazing perspective on life and living and, you know, everything. So that's what we do here. We talk about adventure, people who have broken out of the norms, who have done things that got them out of their comfort zones, who are living a life that is changing perspectives and changing the world around them. This podcast is sponsored by Gregory Pax, makers of not only the first and best and largest variety of plus size packs, but also what you're going to need for your adventures, whether it's duffels or suitcases or slings or whatever it is. Here's the commercial part. Use promo code Andy15 at checkout when you go to gregorypax.com. It really does help me out. Like, it legit, like, directly helps me out. So I definitely would appreciate that if you did that. You can also support me by going to buymeacoffee.com/andyfilmsandhikes. You can support me directly there, and it directly helps me out, and I appreciate that. You can support the show. Also support the show by, like, sharing, liking, subscribe. You know all the things they tell you to do on YouTube and on social media. Like, subscribe, smash that notification bell or whatever. Anyways, I'm very excited to share this week's episode with you. Last year, I decided to pick up some hikers who were making their way from the PCT, where I'm at here in Oregon, to the Oregon Coast Trail, because there was fires and closures, and I gained what I hope to be some lifelong friendships from picking up those four hikers. And one of those hikers was named Dogfoot, who I can't say enough good things about Dogfoot. And we kept in touch, and I had him on the show. And he just lives a really cool and amazing life. And he's done some cool and amazing things, and is doing some more cool and amazing things. So I wanted to have him on the show. I have a few other those people on the show as well. But nothing. We're just going to get into it. We're going to get into this conversation. So, without any further ado, my conversation with my friend, Dogfoot. Our next guest, I met in Medford, Oregon, as he was trekking along with some other hikers along the PCT. He got sidetracked because of the fires, which is pretty common here in Oregon, during the summer, and got to know him a little bit, and then PCT days, what do you know, I see him again. We have Dogfoot, normally known as Eric, hiker, veteran, all-around badass. How you doing today, Dogfoot?
I'm doing amazing. I just count as any day that I'm still breathing on my own as a good day.
Awesome. So before we get into it, just introduce yourself. Like, who you are, where you come from. If you were to like just run into somebody on the trail, hiking out in the forest, what would you tell them about yourself?
I'm just a dude from LA, that city boy that somehow found a huge passion and connection with nature. First born, first generation of my family born here. My roots are from Honduras. So born and raised in California, LA, and joined the military at 17. Did some time there. Once I got off, a little bit of a loss of identity. I had a role to play. I had a few people that I was in charge of towards the end. But then, you know, once the uniform comes off, and then you're like, oh crap, you're back to square one again. And, you know, struggling to find your identity, your niche, where you fit in this crazy planet. And, you know, like everybody else through life, ups and downs, I had a, you know, run in from with the law, went back to school, actually graduated and finished. And then around 2018, I had a little bit of a funk in life, and it was a little bit of a depression spiral. I had no answer. I didn't know what to do. I started telling people that my plan was to just grab my camera and hike all of California. I had no plan, no idea what I was going to do. I just, maybe like a hobo up along the five, just either way, just making my way up there. And that's when a friend, and to this day, I still can't remember, I'm on a mission to find this friend, because this person changed my life and doesn't even know it. This person just said, well, if you're going to do that, you might as well hike the PCT. And I was like, what the hell is that? You know, then, you know, mentioned what it was, a little trail from Mexico to Canada, went home, YouTubed it, and somehow landed on the world famous Dixie. You know, and here's this young lady doing the AT on her own. So I was like, okay, you know, that was a big boost of confidence that, you know, she was able to do that on her own. And then from her to other legendary greats, you know, the Darwin, the Tip Taps, and what's that gentleman? Oh, Second Chance Hiker.
Yeah, Corey,
so many motivating people that, you know, any excuse that you would put up that, like, oh, I can't do it because I'm old, I can't do it because I have kids, I can't do it because I have some type of body ailment. And I saw all of that on trail, which those people actually inspired me more than, you know, the fit body 30-mile-a-day athletes, which that's amazing. But, you know, there were people out there with CPAP, you know, machines to help mm-hmm. them get through things. And as you know, backpacking, every ounce counts. And to imagine throwing in that extra weight for medications or apparatuses to help you out is just inspiring.
So backing up before the PCT, what was it like growing up in Los Angeles? Having grown up in Southern California myself and in Las Vegas, not the most outdoorsy environment, though the outdoors is there. People don't realize, they think LA, yeah. they think urban sprawl, but it's that there's stuff to do there, as I've seen you on your Instagram. What was it like for you growing up in LA? Were you really outdoorsy or more of a city kid? What was that like?
Blind, I would say. I think more so being Hispanic in our culture, hiking outdoors really isn't in our thing, because our parents that usually migrated from, you know, here did that as a kid to go get firewood, to go to school, hiking and going through mountains and trails and things like that. So other than Kern River, I didn't go to my first national park until I was 32.
Oh, wow.
And I have Yosemite 5 hours, 5.5 from here, Joshua 2 hours, Channel Islands, Death Valley. These places did not even exist in my radar, but I think it's just more of a cultural thing. So I was just an urban kid, you know, and Like you said, you being from LA and still living in the city, you know, being in a city, you grow this armor, this, you know, this radar, this shield, a guard about you. People usually in the city coming at you, usually don't come at you to give you something or give you good news. They want to sell you something. They want you to buy something. They want money from something. So being from here, I feel like I always had this, like, just guard against people. And wow, yeah, doing the trail like the PCT and hitting local towns, Wrightwood, Idlewild, Mount Laguna, all these little towns down here that the people were so kind that I would forget. I was like, it would hit me that I'm still in Southern California. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm like an hour, you know, away from LA and still in Southern California. Cause, you know, usually I see, you know, social media things on California and a lot of California bashing and LA. And I feel a lot of people judge California based off of LA, you know, and I get it. LA is pretty for a couple of days, the highlights. And then it's like, this place is a freaking jungle, you know? And, that's why I now on my own and inspiring, you know, getting my mom out there, it's what I love. Even now, still discovering trails, you know, thanks to technology, things like All Trails and Far Out, I can just, you know, look around here and pick over 500 trails in my area, you know, per se. So, man, I get off track.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. It's funny how that stuff is so close to there. Like, I know we're out, as a teenager being in Vegas, I was 20 minutes from Red Rock National, you know, recreation area. It's a beautiful hiking area. Hardly ever showed up. One thing I love to do is remind people, you know, where you're at, you know, a lot of these places, LA, San Francisco, Vegas, Portland, there's these green spaces and there's places just right outside the city. There's obviously the issues of access for a lot of people getting their transportation, that sort of thing. But, if you're in the city, you're still in the middle of somewhere. This used to not be city. This used to be. Mm-hmm. So you're surrounded by natural beauty. So growing up in LA, you know, you're blind to all that was going on around you as far as the outdoors and things like that. Hiking wasn't really part of the culture. What led you to join the military at 17?
Well, before I get to that, did you know, and I didn't find this out till after the PCT, LA actually has this through hiking trail called the Backbone Trail.
I've never heard of that.
Neither have I. This awesome hiker, Spikes Elaine, she's out there doing the AT right now. Beast. She, you know, she was doing it. I was like, wait a minute, we have a through hike here, so I'm waiting on the rain because the water's kind of iffy in the area. But yeah, it's, you know, on the radar to do the things that you learn, even after trail, always learning kind of things.
The closest thing I thought there would be to a through hike in Southern California was the Trans Catalina Trail, you know, right off the coast there.
Same. So I guess we have two in the vicinity kind of thing.
Nice.
But now to your question about the military, you know, I wish I could say it was something heroic or patriotic. I actually joined August 28, 2001. Ooh. So I joined at 17, and I remember my mom was totally against it. You know, like, if you want to go and give your life away, you're going to have to wait until you're 18, you know. And so I recruited my stepdad, and he helped me, and we persuaded my mom, and she finally agreed, and she signed, and I joined. And, you know, it was the college money and the travel, because – obviously, this was before September 11, so I reassured her. I said, hey, when was the last time we were in war? What's the worst that's going to happen? And the day I was getting my military ID, September 11, and so it was just a different world from when I joined. So, yeah, what made me join was just wanted to travel and burn some college money, because I barely survived high school, and my my mindset was not thirsty or ready for college. And the fact that we're my grade point was, I don't know, 2.8 or 2 point something that just got by. I was going to go to a community college with nothing wrong with it, but I was just going to go see my same old friends kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it just wasn't inspiring or motivating. And then I, 17, I don't know what the hell I want to do. I'm, I just turned 40. I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. So, I just did the military thing. And then that definitely helped me grow up. Being around, I was the youngest person on my ship, on my first ship for some time. I had just turned 18 in boot camp, and I got in, and I actually joined as a firefighter, undesignated firefighter, and worked with the engineering department. But while all jobs are honorable, it just wasn't quenching my thirst. It was a lot of, it was like a double-edged sword, because it was a lot of cleaning and maintenance on our firefighting equipment. So, you train so much, you want to test your mettle. Mm-hmm. You're a young buck, you want to test your mettle. But at the same time, if we were using our equipment, it meant that bad things were happening. So in a way, I'm glad we never really had to use anything. At the worst, I think we had one fire, which was a trash can fire, nothing serious, nobody got hurt. And then my first deployment, I got inspired when we were off the coast of Djibouti, Africa, and the Marines and the medics got to get off and do some humanitarian work and paint and build a school and check on the villagers. And that just lit a light bulb in my head. And I was just inspired to be a medic. Never have I thought I wanted to deal with needles or blood or anything like that. But that changed the trajectory in my course in the military, and I finished off as a medic, did one more deployment with the Marines out of Camp Pendleton down here in Oceanside. And then after that, just wanted to see what I was missing out here, if pastures were greener on the other side, back in the civilian world.
So getting out in the civilian world, you go to college. I've heard a lot of PCT hikers talk about how either they finish high school, they finish college, or they get out of the military, and there's a sense of they get on the trail because they want to find themselves. They're looking for something. There's something there they're looking for. Did you have that same sense when you got on the PCT?
Same thing. I hear that too. I was, hoping. I was hoping. I craved for an aha moment, a Reese Witherspoon and Wild moment. I didn't get that, if I'm being honest. I don't know if I was searching too hard or if there even is such a thing, but what I did find was almost an uncountable series of amazing events and memories and people and strangers that became friends and family. And I think it was a fair trade.
What was the first day on the trail like for you? You get on the trail, you've seen the videos, you've seen, Dixie, you've seen Darwin, you've seen, Second Chance, you've seen Elena, you have these expectations, and you get there, you're at the terminus. What was that like?
Liars. usually you see the video and then you see the 1 mile marker and then they're up in the mountains somewhere, and then a little short known fact, after that mile marker, you somehow find yourself back almost road walking and next to the park for a little bit. So that part's deceiving a little bit.
Camp on the Congress.
Yeah. But although I guess it was the buildings that were closed off were barracks for, I forget what kind of soldiers, like even Buffalo soldiers, I want to say. So there is some history facts to that that's not really known because it's just fenced off bungalow barracks. But what I was feeling, oh man, first day of high school, first day of work, butterflies, anxiety, trying to ship the 2006, miles left. But overall, I think over, you know, I'm thinking back to my videos, nothing but smiles, overwhelming smiles. I remember my cheeks hurt. I was just, I think because I, from 2018 to 2002, it was just building up that momentum. You know, I've seen it so many times through videos and, you know, through all the high, through bloggers you've mentioned. You know, you've seen it, you see the marker, you see the first mile marker, you see the mile three train crossing. And when you're finally there and you're seeing it with your own eyes, you're touching it, you know, it's just, I was just cheesing so much. I think I made it to mile, slightly past mile three before I had my first cry. It just like, boom, like a wave of emotions. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm really going to cry. And yeah, I was crying. And not only that, I actually got lost. Not crazy lost, but where I had to pull out my far out three times the first day. So it built to the anxiety of, I hope this isn't a sign of things to come if I'm getting lost this many times, this quick, having to pull out, you know, my phone. First day, I was just every couple of minutes just on my phone. I'm clearly walking on the trail, but just the insecurity of it all. I was just constantly on my phone. Then I started getting worried that I'm going to drain my battery because I'm constantly checking it. So yeah, just a mix of emotions of anxiety and excitement for me.
At what point did you decide to start recording your journey? Because I know you were posting on YouTube. I think you were doing a lot of social media posts. What inspired that?
Oh, that was from day one. I'm pretty proud of that because while I definitely cannot compete with, you know, like the greats of the amazing style of Tip Tap and Dixie and I love oh my God, I'm brain farting right now. Darwin, his tone and his storytelling vibe. I love all that, and I don't compete. But you know, it's not a competition, but I knew I wanted to do it from day one because one, I just have a shitty memory. And quite frankly, you get overwhelmed with the beauty that had I not recorded, even now, I haven't seen my full trail back. Sometimes I'll look at a video or two and completely forgotten. I'll be, oh yeah, that's right. I, you know, I did see that, or I did go through that, or it did look like that kind of thing. So I'm never did it with the intention of, you know, wanted to be a blogger or aspirations of, you know, reaching greatness or anything. But I just knew that especially for my family, although it's not in Spanish, I started catering more to the U.S. They get to see it and get to share, you know, what I walk through. And instead of me trying to describe what the Sierras look like and reaching iconic spots, I can just, you know, give them the link and show them and share that moment with them.
And you have a very unique trail name, Dogfoot. Now, I've heard the story before because we did that thing with Gregory at PCT Days where he told the story. But let our listeners know what's the story behind your trail name?
Well, I think that was my first rule break. When I heard you get a trail name, I thought, oh great, what a great opportunity to shed your government name that, you know, you didn't pick Andy, you know, your parents were inspired and that's your name, and same with most of us. And I thought you got to pick your name. Then, you know, coming to find out, like, you know, your trail family or something. But before I even started the trail, that name came inspired from my grandma, actually, back in Honduras, where my roots are from, in Spanish, pata de chucho or pata de perro, depending where you're from, is it's dog foot. And that's like a name you would say for somebody that can't stand still and is constantly on the move. You know, if you recall dogs, they're They sniff here, they walk there, they sniff there, they're walking over there, they're, you know, constantly on the move. And so when I was into the PCT hole and everybody would, you know, call, my family would call and check in and ask, you know, oh, where's Eric? And she would reply saying, oh, he's out there being dogfoot, you know, being a pata de chucho. So family always knew I was out there. Just if I wasn't at work, I was up there being a geek with any new gear that I got, and I would go out there just to test it out. And she sadly passed November 2001. So in honor of her is where I had taken that name, just to remember her, and just in honor of her is where I took it. So controversial part, I guess, is that it wasn't given to me. And again, how usually people just the passive aggressive way of saying hike your own hike. It's just, I don't think, you know, rules apply out there. And that was the first rule I broke. And I chose my own true name, but, you know, in honor of her.
Which I think was way better anyways. And, you know, those rules, those trail rules are really more, it's not like leave no trace. That's like a suggestion, like
guide by.
You have, your story is way more like inspirational and like brings tears to eyes. Other, you know, some people like, your trail name's Blowout. Why'd your trail name Blowout? Because, you know, I missed the cat hole. You know, stupid stuff like that.
You know? Yeah. You know, and those are cool. But I mean, like, you see, I actually saw somebody bickering over the name Viking. Like, I guess there, you know, there's always going to be somebody named, you know, a common name, Viking or Stick or something. And yeah, so in that aspect, I can say it's probably pretty unique. I don't think anybody else has Dogfoot.
I don't think so. I haven't heard it.
So, yeah, you know, it always, even now, just thinking back to it, and you know, it always brings me to mind. And definitely felt her on trail. Weird things would happen. I would complain about the heat and this sudden huge curtain of clouds, and some blowy winds would start picking up to cool me down, and things like that just would constantly remind me, you know, that she's up there and still has my back from up there.
Nice. So speaking of trail names and the community, you ended up with a trail family.
Yes.
How'd that come about? What was that like? Because you go there, you don't know anybody. You're just like,
yeah,
you know, so you're hiking by yourself, and then people start to band together and they start to, you know, create these little tramleys, trail families. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
I will be honest. I was 50-50. I didn't know. I mean, obviously, I didn't have anybody to start with. I wouldn't say I was completely anti-trail family, but I wasn't crazy about it because I wanted this to be win or lose, all me, you know, my decisions, my choice, because I decided to camp here, because I decided to do whatever. And, you know, just when you do the tramley thing, you do have to compromise a little bit, you know. How that came to be was through my really good friend, VIP. I met him day three through our Australian friend. I had met the Aussie guy. We hiked a few miles and we met VIP, who got his name late a few days later. But what you call it? Him and I started hiking. Well, it was us three for a bit. You know, you got a Southern San Diego guy, an LA guy, and an Australian guy hiking together. That could only happen through the PCT, you know. And at some point we had split up, and it became, you know, because our Australian friend, he had visa issues. So his thing was up. So he pushed up ahead to do some fun stuff. And then so it was just VIP and I for quite some time. And It worked great. I loved it. You know, we were like wild coyotes out there. You know, we would do some night hike, wake up when we want. And, you know, we felt a little bit more wild. And I was constantly getting just nagging injuries. Big Bear, Wrightwood, shoot, everywhere in between. I would say day two, something hurt. Something or another would hurt. My Achilles, my plantar fasciitis, my knees, my back. something. I live here in LA, and the closest point to me is Vasquez Rocks. So that's a really a highlight point that people know off the 14. So I got off there, and I knew I was getting off trail, you know, just to lay low. Also, my plan was thinking ahead of the Sierras, no rush, since I was the first week starting. I wanted to allow some time to let the snow melt. So I knew I was going to stay here, and it just worked out. I was hurt too. So I ended up staying home 11 days, and I was getting a really bad case of FOMO. I'm seeing my friends, and they're in hiker town. They're, you know, walking the aqueduct, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm over here. Still, I'm over here. Still, I'm still hurt. I'm dealing with this injury. And I think, yeah, my 11th day, I just finally decided to get back on trail, trying to catch up to VIP. I didn't catch him until Yosemite because he took a side trail to do Half Dome and hang out at the Dirtbag Campground in Camp 4. So by that point, he already had a tramway he had been adopted to. Some things had happened, some people had split up, and then when I got there, it ended up being three of us, and we collected some, we dropped some off. At the end, we all disbanded, but we, you know, we were definitely together during the PCT days. I think it was, it got really crazy at the point where we met you, and I still talk about you. Like, you are... Every time I talk PCT, you are probably definitely in the conversation, because as far as kind gestures go, I mean, the day VIP met you, we were in despair. We were in the hotel room just with our hands up. We were talking, thinking renting a U-Haul truck from there, but then we were thinking, where are we going to drop it off when we get to the coast? Then we were thinking of an actual car rental and making sure we can drop it off somewhere over there. And we felt really defeated. It wasn't a quit feeling, but it was like, what the hell are we going to do? And then he gets hungry, he goes to Taco Bell, and he comes back and he tells us this story on how, you know, he met the daughter of the mayor of the town, and then through that, you answered, and you're going to pick us up. And you drove us, what was that, two and a half hours?
2.5 hours, yep.
You wouldn't take a dollar, a snack, a meal, and it was just one of those, I think most people that are watching this can agree how we have hard time finding somebody to drop us off to the airport, or doing something kind locally that is a friend or a close family or close friend or a family member. And here's this stranger from Facebook that completely dropped off. What was it? It was four of us at the time, right? Four strangers off, 2.5 hours. And then I think you still have 2.5 back regardless. And, you know, your time, your gas, your money, your effort. It really is one of the stories that left me really humbled. And I was super psyched that we're going to run into you back in PCT days, and run into you in PCT days already having some type of connection, you know, with you. It was just really amazing. And then you hooked me up with the Gregory bag to top it off. You
know, happens to be a sponsor of this podcast.
Hey, no, I definitely love them. I forget the crew that hooked me up's name, but they were awesome there working with me, measuring me, hooking me up. And I still rock that bag. Still have another bag that they hooked me up with. So, yes, definitely thank you to Gregory, because they are an awesome company, especially when it comes to, you know, most people can argue, you know, lifetime warranty on Osprey, Gregory, or whatever. But I definitely think the customer service is top notch with Gregory.
They really are. And yeah, that's why I'm with them. Thank you for those kind words, which segues into, you know, my next point here. That the time you were hiking, you get through Yosemite, the Sierras, Yosemite, you get through Northern California, and you got the McKinney Fire, which just, you know, shuts everything down. You guys mm-hmm. were, you guys, did you have to be evac'd or did you just miss the evac off the trip?
No, we never got the evacs or nothing. We made it up to Shasta. We clearly saw the smoke, and then that's when we rerouted Oregon and started fresh. Well, we became European style backpackers up the Oregon coast and had our full with delicious clam chowder and coffee. I will say that was an unexpected pricey part of the trip, but very, very beautiful. Can't argue. You know, I didn't expect the little shuttles to take us from town to town, which made it pretty easy. We honestly, well, I guess you didn't get updated on that, but I think we made it about 30 something miles on that trail.
Cause you went from the PCT, you got there before the fire, you waded your way up to Medford. That's where I got hooked up with y'all. Mm-hmm. And the plan was to hike the Oregon Coast Trail in lieu of, which several PCT hikers had done, because there was the closure there in Northern California. Then there was a few closures ahead of you around Bend.
Yeah.
At that time. And there was just so much smoke mm-hmm. everywhere. It was nasty. So several PCT hikers were making the trek over. And this is after there was like a huge thing with Trail Angels. We were, you know, getting people off, literally, you know, off-roading, getting guys off the trail so they
could miss the fire. Off fire roads.
It was crazy. And then, you know, you get from a trail that's very well marked, very well maintained, to the Oregon Coast Trail, which is just kind of a suggested route along the beach for 300 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually surprised Far Out or All Trails actually doesn't have a route for it. We actually ended up having to download this other trail app for it, but it was a more or less go by. Because like you mentioned, it was not well marked. We ended up going a mile one way, then we'd have to backtrack and take the opposite way and try our way. It was a lot of unkept trail, a lot of, you get to one sign, but there's literally four ways that you can go. So you're just like, ah, I don't know. So there, and then the road walking, I guess I was in some really comfy Hokas by that point, so I didn't feel it as much, which was a big change for me. But and it was the distraction. It was very beautiful walking, at least along the beach.
Yeah.
And obviously a good distraction with the contrast of the heat we were just in, sucking in all that smoke, to at least being grateful that you're breathing in fresh, cool ocean air, you know, so. You complain, but you give and take kind of thing, you know, so it's all about your perspective. But it was pretty difficult, and we only lasted about 30 something miles, so we were just like discovered the little shuttle thing, and yeah, we got lazy, got up to Portland, eventually killed some time there before we made our way to Hiker Days.
Nice,
to
nice.
Start fresh in Washington.
So and that's obviously not the end of the story. You get up to you get PCT days, all that goes down, you get into Washington, and then eventually the Northern Terminus is shut down and you have a lot of hikers bailing. They're just like, we're done. We had the issues in Ashland, had the issues of smoke outside of, we're just done. And, you know, people are saying at this point, you know, this season's a wash. You kept going. I mean, what was that like? What was that decision to like, I'm going to finish this trail?
Well, full disclosure, obviously a big chunk of Oregon was missed off, so it's not a successful completed hike. Long story short, plan is to do CDT AT and finish my actual third trail or completion of the PCT from Shasta to PCT days, whichever year I end up doing that trail, and to officially complete this high of a Triple Crown chase. What was the question again?
When you get to Washington, the Northern Terminus ended up being closed. At that point, a lot of hikers just bailed. Not soon after PCT days, people were just like, okay, I'm done. And to do a complete through hike of the PCT is difficult.
With the fires
and the smoke, there's always so many closures. There's a lot of debate with the community. If the section's closed, did you really complete it until you go back and do it or not? So what was that decision for you like to keep pressing on and get to the Northern Terminus eventually?
All it took was a look. Our partner I was hiking with, we just looked at each other. We just like a little grin, and we just knew, if she was down and I was down, kind of thing. And it was a bit of a bummer. I remember getting bailing. I forget the bail out of that exit, but getting to Leavenworth, we bailed out to Leavenworth because of the fire. And there, we ran into a lot of familiar faces, and seeing a lot of people. They had made a makeshift the Northern Terminus, thing, and they were taking the pictures there. And
Sorry, my comp
picking, what's that?
something weird's happening here. One second. Okay, you're good. Go ahead.
The aliens are coming. They're tapping in on this conversation. But what you call it? Yeah, it was kind of a bummer seeing a lot of familiar friends and, calling it there, whether it was visa or financial, with the rerouting, drained a lot of people's financial pocket there, and or just the loss of motivation kind of over the whole flip-flopping and looking around. So a lot of people just did call it, but man, I'm just a stubborn ass mule. Like I it wasn't enough for me. If not, it I think I felt more of a drive. And as long as I felt safe, because I think the fires had come, it was just more of a smoke by that time. We went for it the day we did. Some other hikers were going for it too, so kind of strength in numbers, and it was smoky. And the thing is that they're really, when you're in it and it's just smoke, you're trying your best, I guess, not to huff and puff so much, but it's super hard to tell where it's coming from. Some people can argue that it was stupid. I forget right now if we had checked and the fire had kind of cleared out and it was just smoke or whatever, but we had went for it. And the first day back on trail, it was smoky, but the second day it started to clear up. But it was just at that point that we knew that there was no, we were going to keep going, at least to Mazama. When we got to Mazama, of course, we knew about the Hart's Pass and the last 35 miles of it being closed. And it another bummer, like just imagine doing a marathon and mile 25, they tell you, sorry, you got to get off, go home now, and no mountain, no trail is worth your life. But I think the fires had, it had been an old news kind of thing, just smoke was lingering, and so I remember that night we were thinking all kinds of crazy ideas. We were gonna cross into Canada and the Manning and do something like that. Some people were crossing and doing some canoe thing and canoeing over some lake and hitting the terminus that way. We even thought of this crate. Well, I did, I guess. Semi thought of it, about this off the Blue Ridge, and then from there completely bushwhacking across, thinking it was going to be a straight line like that tree cut line that's famous there. In my donkey head, I thought it was just going to be a clear tree line that would continue, but I'm so glad we didn't, because we opted to be bad. We had received COVID, intel from other hikers that I guess had crossed the line, the last 35, and we were thinking of saying F it and doing it. But when they were just got back like rock stars that they had just done it, they didn't see anybody, no smoke, no danger, no anything. Then it kind of was like, okay, it kind of alleviated the whole insecurity of it all. And I guess, what we ended up doing is hiked until the red line closure. And then I'll just start saying I was bad. I'm not gonna, throw this other person. I will just cross this line. And we went for it. You know, I went for it. We woke up extra early and just decided to go for it, that it was just 35 miles. We can knock it out, and thought we would just be distracted by such beauty. And the goal was just not to run into anybody dressed in khaki or full green and get in trouble. The more we went, honestly, it was, you know, technically still closed, and technically an amber could fly miles away and restart a fire. Technically anything could have happened. But just going with our gut feeling, honestly, there wasn't ever a point of like, oh shit, like maybe we should turn back, because things were cleared up, and the signage that we saw was from late August, you know? So it was like, oh, you know, these signs are pretty old, just left here. And so we actually got to the terminus October 5th. It was a beautiful thing. You know, usually you have to share it and get out of the way for other hikers, take their pictures and all that. But it was such a gift. There's a little nook right in front of it that one tent can, you know, fit in there. And my birthday is October 6th. So it was just like almost a beautiful thing. Went to sleep. I woke up for the regular 2 a.m. piss. And when it hit me that it was my birthday, oh, I gave that thing the biggest hug. It was 2 a.m., me and the Northern Terminus is hugging out. And as soon as we woke up, last pictures, and we raced back to the green zone, and hoping to avoid any more, you know, the adrenaline that in every turn you're going to run into, you know, a ranger or something. But we actually ended up running into other hikers that heard the same thing, and they were going for it, and, you know, just told them the same thing. It was clear, water was plenty, didn't see anybody, kind of thing. And up to that point, it was awesome. I don't know how, you know, things might have changed afterwards, but it was just a feeling, you know, and I'm sure the audience can argue 50-50 that I would have done the same thing, or that was dumb, but it was just what was in our guts. We, you know, we were arguing of going this, that, and the third, but as far as everything was going, I don't know. It was just a nagging thing in me that I could do it, that I wanted to do it. And I'm glad I did it, you know, despite nice. Being right or wrong. I'm glad I did it. I love looking back at those pictures.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
So thinking back to a year ago now, you've a little more than a year now, you've completed that trail. You know, you're going to go back to Shasta to PCT days. What was life though when you got home and you had to go back to the grind, go back to the 9-to-5, go back to, you know, having to, you know, pay the bills, that sort of thing? What was that transition like?
I mean, I think most people can agree, and I see most of my fellow alumni's social medias, and, you know, their work here, and then they're right back out there somewhere, just because it's not the same, and it's true. It really does ruin your life in the most beautiful way. It changes your way of living. I don't have much, but I feel I have a lot of stuff I don't need, and I'm still trying to purge a lot of things before the CDT next year. But yeah, you know, you go from I think half people like knowing the certain structure of, you know, I have to go to work at this time. I work at this place, sit at the same table. I work from 8 to, you know, 5, and I drive, you know, the same monotony. And some people like the excitement of not knowing. That's where I fall. And for the 220 days I was on trail, every night was a new home, a new trail, a new something I've never seen before. So every day was just constant excitement. And now being back to the same four walls, cement walls, electric cables, hearing helicopters, traffic, you can see why people urge or move out to those more secluded areas or run out to nature more, because it, you know, people often ask me, like, what was the most dangerous part, what animal, you know, scared you the most? And the most dangerous run-in was with that homeless man in Portland that pulled the gun out on us. And other than that, like the bears and the mountain lion, like I didn't see any mountain lions. I don't know. They saw me. I did see a few bears, but they seemed very little interested in me. So it's just a big change, and I crave it more. That's why, you know, for my social, if I'm not here, I'm out there as much as possible.
And I'm fascinated by the way you're living your life too, because you're not, even though you're home, you're working, you're, you know, one day you're doing drywall, the next way you're on a TV set, you're doing all these things, which is pretty awesome, by the way. But you're forming your life in a way where you can go out and do these adventures, and now, you know, you're not tied down to a certain job where you're like, oh, you know, taking 6 months off to do the CDT, it's going to ruin my career. Because that's just a part of who you are now, just watching your socials and watching what you do. What is the future? I mean, you got the CDT coming up, you have the rest of the PCT finishing that off, but what does the future look like for you in the next, you know, 1 to 5 years?
I honestly don't know. Honestly, from my military time, sadly, I would have to say I have lost more veteran friends from suicide and combat. And which each loss, my appreciation for life grows, because it's just, you know, you think you're going to see them tomorrow. I just saw them smiling and now they're gone. Nothing is promised. People, this illusion of control that I'm going to work for this person or this place for X amount of years, and I'm going to be a good person, and I'm going to, you know, retire, and I'm going to get money, and I'll be able to, by the time, I mean, I'm 40, I'm sleepy, and I want to take a nap by 8, 9. By the time I'm 60, 70, I'm going to want to go to bed by 6. So even assuming you make it to that time or that year and you have the money, you're going to be too tired to enjoy it. So and nothing is promised. You can go crossing the street. So I want to experience everything I want to experience while my two legs can still take me on my own, and I still can. And yeah, again, like I don't know. I know I'll never be homeless. I got my tent and my quilt. <That's awesome. laughs> So there's that. But yeah, no, I just, you know, the American lifespan is about through 80, 85, you know, so literally at 40 now, I'm literally halfway there, you know, and at least, you know, although I have more back and knee pain, this is in a way sweeter, because growing up, I didn't know shit. Now I'm 40, I should know better. And now I can do what I want. So now it's a perfect opportunity. Also, you know, not having kids or being married gives me a huge or no leash to do what I want, you know, the liberty to be selfish, you know, in a way, and just do what I want, kind of thing.
Awesome. So closing out here, if listeners want to follow you on social media, see what you're doing, see what your adventures are like, where would they find you?
What just really had the Dogfoot underscore trailing at both Instagram and Yahoo. But they should definitely follow you because you capture the wide net of hikers and mentalities. You know, I've heard previous podcasts of yours. So, you know, I know you've gotten previous vets, members from the LGBT, popular ones like Darwin and Tit Tap. So you have a really huge range and awesome. And honestly, super grateful that you came and are in my life, and you are definitely one of the inspiring people out there. And I'm glad to know you, Andy.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much. And thank you for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me. You know, I just think I'm a dude. It's funny that my friends consider me an expert because I did the PCT, and I'm still learning things. Did you know my headlamp? I used to contemplate for hours that my headlamp would turn on. I didn't know until after the PCT that if you hold both buttons for 2 seconds, it disables it and you can't turn it off. You know, things.
There's little things like that you learn all the time.
Yeah, you know, you would think you had over 2,000 miles to figure this out, and I didn't. But you know, that's why I think a good hiker is a constant learner. You know, I may be a little bit more experienced than some, but there's still a lot I need to learn, and I love to learn. So I guess that's what the future holds for me. Hopefully, there's more lessons and learn and experiences.
Awesome. Well, Dogfoot, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Dogfoot. Also, Eric, Dogfoot, and Dino for coming on the show, for gracing us with just you. Like, I love this guy. I love Dogfoot. He is amazing. So thank you so much for coming on and just chatting with me for an hour. That was awesome. Make sure you follow him on the various social media networks. And if you don't follow me, follow me at Andy Thompson Hikes or Adventure Is Out There Pod on the Instagrams. That's would be amazing. And yeah, y'all can continue to support me. Go to Buy Me a Coffee. Link for that's in the bio. You can also buy something from the sponsor of this podcast, Gregory Pax. You just go to gregorypax.com, get what you need for whatever adventure you're going on. We talked about Gregory Pax on this episode. They really did hook it up. That PCT days, man. I had fun at that PCT days, and Gregory's been so generous with just wanting to genuinely help hikers out. I love him. So, but go ahead and just go to gregorypax.com, get what you need, and then when you check out, use code Andy15 at checkout. You get 15% off. I don't think I mentioned that before. You get 15% off, and it directly helps me out. So, guys, thank you so much. Hit me up on social media, Andy Films and Hikes. Let me know what else you want to hear. You can also email me, andy@andyfilmsandhikes.com. And thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Adventure Is Out There podcast.